Hello, and welcome to the official Barnsley FC podcast. On this podcast, we take time to get to know people, learn about their perspectives and their experiences. We explore their beliefs about what success is, what they appreciate in life, what motivates them, and most importantly, what makes them happy. Thank you very much for joining us. If you are new to this podcast, then you can search for us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Give us a follow to make sure you don't miss any future episodes. So I'm here at this time with Kay. So Kay, just to set the table really and lay it out so people understand what's occurring here, like random that I'm with you when we're chatting here at Orwell. So me and you met during, well, we didn't meet, but we started communicating during lockdown. Barnsley played Chelsea in the FA Cup, didn't they? And we've done that before, we have. And we'll move on to that. This is not your podcast, this one, but we will talk about that one. and you came on my fans' podcast, really, that I was doing at that time during lockdown, keeping people entertained. And from then on in, really, we got chatting quite often, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. I mean, obviously, you were in previous work before that.
That's right.
We spoke about a few things, you know, spoke about what I was doing. And kind of just hit it off, you know, had a bit of a natural chemistry, you know, I tried to sort of give a few points of views on some of the stuff that you were going through and vice versa, and it's kind of sort of just kept in touch after that. It's kind of taken off, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. You were a real, like, crux during some difficult periods for me in a previous job, and I kind of, you support me quite well and always seem to have really good advice, and I like to think I paid that back as well with friendship, I suppose. And we stayed in touch then, and then we kind of, like, touch on the fact that maybe people might want to listen to our conversation. I certainly like our conversations. If it were recorded, I'd listen back and think, oh, so that's quite interesting. Maybe people aren't interested.
You're right. I mean, it's a case of trying to make a difference, you know, a positive difference in people's lives. And obviously, without getting too cheesy, obviously you've done that for me with how we've interacted, and like you just touched on, you know, helped you in terms of where you were in your part of your life. So, you know, if we can do that through us just talking and conversing about different topics, different views, and, you know, even if it just makes a difference to one person, then, you know, that makes it worthwhile.
That's it. And, you know, we're going to keep somebody company on a car journey, or maybe while they're doing the lawn or doing their ironing or the... Exactly that. And obviously, and I've talked in the preamble prior to this about what the podcast's about, and, you know, you talked there about different people and different perceptions and views and on success and life as a whole and things that made them happy. So as first guest, really important figure, I suppose, Barnsley Football Club, particularly in the history of the, well, it's in the fabric of the history, really, is and a former gaffer of your own, in Danny Wilson.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you've just touched on it there. I mean, when you think Barnsley, you know, that's one of the first names that people will definitely associate with Barnsley. Especially this first period, you know, being in the Premiership, etc. So when the name legend's banded about, you know, he genuinely is a Barnsley legend, and a top man as well.
Yeah, I'd never met him until we recorded this podcast. I suppose for me, he's kind of the holy grail of if you're going to be a Barnsley fan and you're going to have a podcast, he's the holy grail. Big time, and I've done plenty of these before. And I'm not usually so nervous, but I remember, like, I picked the phone up to ask him to come in and record, and I just couldn't produce a sentence. When he answered, it's like, hello, it's Danny, and I'd mouth from my mouth, and you know me well, and a lot of people do, like, I don't mind talking, I can talk. And I was tripping over my words. But no, luckily, when he got in, we got down to business, and we had some really good conversation, which we're going to play shortly. I suppose, as somebody that you've come across before in football, I suppose, what is he like? And is there anything in particular you're looking forward to hearing about?
Well, I mean, it's funny you should say that. Obviously, getting nervous sort of speaking to him. Obviously, when I met Danny, he was the first team manager of Bristol City. And I was obviously a youth team player. So, you know, as a youth team player, when you sort of see the first team manager, you know, they've got a certain aura about them, you know, they carry a certain sort of presence, and he was no different, but he was very approachable. You know, you could always talk to him, and he always just came across as a really, really good guy. It'd be interesting to, you know, it's always interesting when you look at people, especially people that, you know, have come across and have had success, kind of what makes them tick, you know, what spurs them on, the things that, you know, that they do like and don't like, you know, their sort of pros and cons. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I suppose. Shall we go for it? Let's get the party started, yeah? So at this time, I have a really special guest with me, quite a privilege as a Barnsley fan of 30 years to be sat opposite this man. I'm not going to introduce him because I always worry that I over-introduce people, some people don't like that, and I undersell people, and some people don't like that. So, do you want to introduce yourself?
I think my voice will do that. I think with this accent, I think people will very much understand who it is.
So, Danny Wilson.
Thank you.
And former Barnsley Football Club and Sheffield Wednesday Football Club manager, and many others.
Yes, yeah, be fortunate to have many, many clubs and... But obviously this area, you know, the two most outstanding ones are the ones you're spoken to. We miss one over them, we're not mentioned.
And of course, player as well. He had a decent career as a footballer as well.
I'd be very fortunate really that I've been able to see both sides of professional football really. But I know which one I prefer. But it's great that I've managed to look on both sides of that, like I say.
Which one do you prefer?
Oh, the player. There's no
player.
Yeah, there's no chance that a management would ever overtake the fact that I wish you enjoyed playing. You know, young, the gift.
almost carefree.
Yeah, too much free. You know, you're free. You just play football. You enjoyed it. The management comes with a lot more responsibility, I suppose. A lot more intense, that's for sure.
Yeah, so you mentioned that, and I've spoken to many previous players. They kind of don't miss the physical aspect of the football about, you know, been quite intense. And do you miss any of that, I suppose? Do you keep healthy and well in terms of exercise? Have you got something that's replaced that?
The only thing that's replaced is just golf, really. So, I think I've had an ankle replacement about a year ago, so that's curtailed quite a bit of the stuff I used to do.
Okay.
Unfortunately. But you just miss the fitness and keeping fit every day, and unfortunately, you know, earning a living from it as well. You know, you're healthy, and when you play, that is, you're healthy. You're paid to keep fit, but you're also enjoying every minute of it.
And what about that routine? Because obviously, there's a set routine. Managers will have a certain, you know, layout of the week. Do you miss that? You know, knowing you've got to be somewhere at a certain time. Some people we're sometimes animals of, you know, patterns that we really appreciate. You know, do you miss that?
I don't really miss it, but there also has to be a case for it. You know, the discipline that you get as a player, but certainly what you're trying to instill in players as a manager. You know, so in that respect, you know, it's I won't say I miss it in that respect, but I do like the fact that you are disciplined to a certain degree of what you're supposed to be able to do.
Yeah. You mentioned about how tough it were being a manager, the responsibility. Things have changed so quickly just in the last 5 years, 10 years. And obviously now we've got a head coach here at Barnsley. Just on that, would you feel that might be a little bit easier in terms of you can just focus on the one bit of coaching the team, making sure they're ready for match days, and you're not kind of overseeing a lot of the other stuff? Because obviously now there's CEOs in place and head of sports science and all that kind of different departments that are managed to a certain degree.
Well, yeah, I mean, when I was managing a few years ago, obviously you oversaw everything.
Yeah.
And in fairness, you know, you talked to the groundsman and see how the pitch was going on. You talked to the secretaries and whatever. You do everything yourself. And so now that burden's taken away from you to a certain degree. But you still have the responsibility. You know, you're responsible. You know, your name's it. At the head of everything, really. Everybody looks at you. They don't necessarily look at the chief exec. You know, they still look at the person who's in the manager's chair. So there still comes a great responsibility, even though the roles change completely from when I
Yeah, of course. Talking about you now then, being Danny Wilson at this minute in time, what's that like? Are you enjoying it? I suppose I've seen the book recently out. Yeah. We had a chat in the lift on the way up. You're not coming tomorrow, but you're going and watching some non-league football.
Yeah, I mean, I do that as well. I go up and down the country. I've watched Premier League. I've watched down into Northern Counties, you know, lower league. So I get around quite a bit. I quite enjoy it. But, you know, I'm not sat on the touchline. You know, that was yes. Great. I leave it to the young boys now. But, no, from my point of view, no, I enjoy my life. It's a lot different than what it's been for 45 years, nearly 50 years, where the intensity was there. You know, now I can sit and watch a football match if I go to one and have no pressure. I've got two little grandchildren, which have taken a lot of time up, which are fantastic. And my golf as well. You know, we've taken holidays, Karen and I, my wife, which we at a time in the season or a time in the year we're never able to be.
Yeah, you speak like a man whose heart rate is much lower than it used to be. Like the lifestyle you're living now, do you spend much time with your grandkids then? Are you quite active and in amongst it? And I bet they keep you fresh.
Very much so, yeah. We've got a little girl who's only 10 months old and her boy 4 years old. So, you know, we it sounds full. You know, it's all hands to the tiller, so to speak. But yeah, he's fantastic. And it's a different world being a grandfather or grandparents, and a lot of people out there who are listening and will know. But we love every minute of it, yeah.
That's brilliant. So moving on to your biggest achievement, I suppose, and your opinion and what that might be, given your career and the life you've had so far. Obviously, there's plenty to come, no doubt. You're a busy man. What would you say would be your biggest achievement?
If it's football orientated, I suppose it's the longevity of being in football. I mean, nowadays we see you know, players, yet to a certain degree, can have a certain length of playing wise, but when it comes to management as well, you still don't know. We've seen people being in jail for 3 months and never go back into it. Yeah. You know, and I never see other people like Sir Alex, who's been in it 50 years as a manager, you know. So I think the fact that you can stay in football for such a long time, I think that's a big achievement in itself. Very fortunate that, you know, I've been employed by some great clubs, you know, and I've had some great times as well. So I suppose that really in my life is, on the management side of it, is achievements. Footballing wise, you know, there's plenty of things that we can talk about there, but I think the longevity comes into it.
Yeah, and away from football, what would you say would be your biggest achievement?
Well, I've been with my wife 43 years, so
okay.
I think that's a nice achievement nowadays. I think we've had a fantastic life. I think bringing the kids up, seeing the kids growing up with the right values and you know, teaching them the right tools how to get on with life. And so I suppose that is as well. You know, that's it's a value that everybody, I think, wants to have. But I'm delighted that it fell into place for me.
Of course. So the two achievements you've mentioned there then, so first and foremost, the longevity in football. Is there any lesson that you've learned that you feel that you could share with people, that you could pass on, I suppose? Have you got any tips to survive, I suppose, so long in what is a tough environment? I mean, we're not all going to work in that environment. We're all going to work in different environments. I suppose longevity in any job, have you got any kind of hints?
Well, as you say, I think you've got some respect for who you're working with and understanding that other people that are in certain jobs or work alongside you are different people to you, you know, and you've got to listen to their views and respect their views. You know, I don't think you can sit and judge, you know, too quickly or, you know, from whatever they say or what the views are. I think you've just got to listen and you've got to work out yourself later on. But I think more than anything, it's just a bit of respect. You respect people that's around you.
Of course, and then the more personal aspect of that question about your wife and the really long marriage that you've had, happy marriage. Any kind of guidance there on terms of relationships?
Just listen to your wife all the time and say yes. That goes a long way. No, obviously, it's exactly the same. It's respect. You know, I think it's an understanding. I mean, when you're in football as well, you're away from home quite a lot. So, you know, you've got to understand the workload that your wife puts in, you know, bringing two kids up virtually on their own, you know, through all the school life and their infancies. And I think in that respect, you know, I look at it and I just tip my hat to my wife. You know, it's we try and make the most of it now because we're back together in terms of, you know, not working in front of them most of the time.
Yes.
But I think it's a hard job, you know, it's a hard job being a parent. And all the time my wife are doing it on her own, you know, so yeah, that I totally respect that.
So you're talking about, you know, respecting people and understanding how much effort they're putting to keep things going. We're going to move on now to our rapid response segment, which is basically 10 questions in 60 seconds. So I hope you're going to be quick enough. And afterwards, me and Coyote will reflect on some of your answers and we'll kind of give you a score out of 10 as to what we thought were good answers. And maybe we might not get to 10 and that might, you know, that might have a massive effect on your score. You know, you want to please me and Coyote, obviously. No, you're not bothered, really. Rapid response. Audio technician Adam is going to give me the thumbs up when we're ready to start and give me the thumbs up when 60 seconds. So we'll start now. Favourite film?
Green Mile.
Favourite meal?
Steak pie.
Favourite pastime?
Golf.
Thing that annoys me most?
Ignorant people.
Favourite place?
South Africa.
Biggest fear?
Flying.
An hour on a bench with?
Joe's mind.
Makes you laugh the most?
Which second?
Makes you laugh the most?
Kids.
Strangest nickname you've been given?
Stunts.
And karaoke song?
Karaoke song. When I was just 17, the Beatles.
Brilliant. That's it. Adam, how do we get on time-wise?
37 seconds.
Wow. That is a good... Is anything you want to elaborate on there? I suppose George Michael, the one that stood out in my mind.
Yeah, he's a legend in my perspective. He's just an absolute fantastic singer as well, but songwriter as well. His lyrics and his words are just absolutely out of this world. It's a sad place for Legend. I think he broke a lot of people's hearts when he passed away so suddenly, so young. But his legacy he left behind is fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. And then Africa. You mentioned Africa being your favourite place.
Yeah.
Any particular places that you've visited that you really liked, or have you been there often?
Yeah, we've been a few times. We like Cape Town. I've been now with Johannesburg. I've been to Nijsburg. Been to as well, you know, so there's a lot of beautiful places. But what gets me more than anything are the people there, and the people are just absolutely fantastic. You know, they're so down to earth, they're so loving, they're so open, you know, and every time we go there, we've had a fantastic time.
Yeah, and I suppose the weather would help a little bit, wouldn't it?
Well, it does. That's the main
attraction, I think. moving on to what is not known about you, I suppose. So what is not commonly known about you? Is there anything you can tell us that you think people probably aren't aware of that?
I don't like swimming in the sea. I'm scared of fish.
Okay.
I'm not scared of fish, but I'm very, very wary. I don't like going in deep water. In the ocean.
It's what's underneath, I suppose. Yeah, it's the unknown, isn't it?
I remember many, many years ago, I remember my first ollie with the lads. And we went to Benny Dome, as everybody did at that in those days. And we decided to go snorkeling. And a friend of mine said, "Yo, it's easy, just have a look and see all the fish and everything." So I get all booted and suited. So I start to swim around. I think, "Oh, that's quite nice. I quite like this."
Yeah.
And I got a tap on my shoulder. So I stood up and I was only knee deep. I couldn't go any further. I just didn't want to go any further. And I got a tap on my shoulder and said, "Are you okay there?" I went, "Oh, yeah, but thank you. God for me."
we spoke earlier about your successes and the longevity you had in football. I suppose, has your opinion of yourself changed in that time from being a player to a manager and then obviously now doing what you're doing now in terms of being a dad and a grandfather? Do you feel like you've grown as a person throughout that time? And what do you think has changed about you?
Oh yeah, I've changed completely. You know, from my playing days to where we are now. What's changed? I'm more patient. I'm more understanding. I listen better. I don't judge people, like I said before, too quickly. You know, I take a lot of time in that respect, and I just try to understand other people more than anything. You know, that's where I've changed a great deal. Whereas maybe before, very, very quick to make a judgment of where you get it wrong and then wonder why you got it wrong because you don't take the time or the investments in people to listen to them. So that's the big change for me. Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose quite a deep question really is, when you reflect and look at yourself, what is it you like about yourself, and what is it that you think, oh, actually, I don't like that aspect about myself?
I do. Like, I think going back to what you said earlier, I'm very patient. I'm a very patient person.
That's a good attribute to have, isn't it?
Well, I think it is. It is in our job, that's for sure. But I think it's good in life anyway. But certainly footballing is, you've got to be patient. Unfortunately, people around you sometimes aren't perfectionists, as we all know. But no, I think in that respect, I'm quite understanding. I'm quite a loving type of person.
Yeah.
I show my emotions very, very easily. You know, I'm not worried about what people think if a Jay comes to my eye and things like that and doesn't bother me. So that's really where I am in I suppose, and I think it's okay about myself.
So just on that then, before I move on, when you talk about being an emotional person and quite loving, you mentioned that word, do you feel like that helped you in terms of managing people, having the ability to tap into people's emotions or understanding how somebody might feel, you know, I suppose empathy to a certain degree, and not sympathy, but empathy in terms of managing people and getting into, like, what makes them tick, how can I make them happy? Because we all know that it's not a secret that the happier that we are in as jobs, that we excel, don't we? So do you feel like that skill helped you, particularly here, in terms of finite resources, really getting the best out of people, because that's what's needed, and we're seeing that currently under Michael. I suppose that period of time when you were here first time around, do you feel like that, in terms of being in touch with your own emotions and understanding other people and how they tick and having those really good relationships, do you feel like that helped?
Well, yeah, yes and no. I think yes in terms of the more mature I've become, the more experienced I became in management, that helped. But I was still a bit feisty, a bit fiery when I was young, and not really as laid back to listen in the early years of my career in particular. So even when I was here, you know, I was still playing, if you remember,
yep.
Which you might not remember.
Just.
Yeah. I was still playing as well, you know, so having two roles was not easy. And so I still had that bit of fire in my belly at that time as well, in terms of playing-wise. I think the older I got, the more and I stepped away from the playing side of it, then you start to see and understand a bit better. You know, and then the empathy you talked about, you can see it far easier when you step away from it a bit. And that's what I did. And I think understanding players and individually understanding players is a major one. At one time, I used to judge everybody together as a team. You know, your eyes would fall together. But there are individuals in that need special attention at times. And I was as good as seeing that in my early days in playing than I was in the later years. And the later years, I fully understood it. It was it didn't come easier, but you still really work at it. But there are individuals out there who do certain things for certain reasons.
Yeah.
And you've got to try and understand why, get to the root of things. And that just goes through communication more than anything.
Yeah, you mentioned emotion there, and I suppose it's a weird one, is it? Because it's good that we can relate to people and we can speak to people on that level and kind of understand them. But yeah. I mean, football is an emotional sport, isn't it? And often with emotions, they kind of cloud sometimes decision making and think. Do you feel like taking that step back when you are a manager is important? I suppose anybody really, sometimes we get so emotional and kind of our feelings cloud our judgment and as logical thinking. Would you say that taking that step back is like really important?
You've got to take the emotion out to decision making. You know, you're making decisions based solely on in football terms, on the thing that's in front of you, rather than, I like him, or I hope he does all right, and this and the other. Said, no, he's not playing well. You know, really, he's not playing well. He shouldn't be in the team.
Yeah.
And I think whether you like people or you dislike people as a player and a manager, it should come into the equation. You know, you're making decisions to win football games.
Yeah.
But sometimes, you know, you do get caught up in the emotion, you know, and you get caught up in your relationship with a certain player against another player, you know, and sometimes that just clouds your judgment, and you've got to step back from it, completely step back from it. And it sounds quite harsh, but that's the only way to do it. You know, you've got to just look at the situation with as much, how can I say, as much clarity as you possibly can,
yeah.
And then make your decision.
Yeah, you talked about fiery when you were younger and having that fire in your belly. I suppose that's important. Motivation is a big thing, isn't it? I suppose what were your motivation throughout your career, and did that change, and did it waver?
Well, I mean, I was quite self-motivated, so I felt that it just came naturally, that, you know, and whatever I did in terms of playing-wise, there was no problem at all. But it came to management, it just the same. You know, I was easily motivated for myself to go on and win games. Then when you get out in the fans, you can see the fans, and they motivate, they give out a bit of a lift again. You know, so I find it quite easy as a trade to have with motivation. I think if you don't have that, then as a manager and the players can see it, then I think you're a loser. If you can have that real, like it's a fire in your belly, they can see it.
Almost an edge.
Yeah, so you'll just lead, yeah. Yeah, but if the players, you know, don't believe that you really mean what you say, what's coming out of your mouth, and your body language can tell you that, and your eyes can tell you that, and your tonality can tell them that, they suss you out very quickly. You know, and so if I'm going mad at somebody and they're saying you should be doing this, and it was, well, you don't really care yourself, do you? You know, that's a dangerous thing. And then you've got to walk away. You know, you're not convincing anybody. So that it's been, I've been fortunate all my career to be able to do that, and I've believed in it. That's the most important. I believed in myself, and I think if I were trying to kid myself, you know, then I would have walked away long before that.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned about relationships with players as well, and the first one that popped into my head was Nicky Eden. Obviously, he's here currently as our under-18s manager. Did you speak often? Does he often ask for advice? Because I suppose Nicky's in a kind of transition of football from when you managed Nicky, now Nicky's managed under-18s in a different era to a certain degree. It's definitely a different decade. So things have changed quite quickly. I mean, what do you feel there is about Nicky that, I mean, the top of the league at the minute?
Yeah.
And then there's some real development going on just over his shoulders behind that stand there. I suppose, what is it about Nicky? And does he sometimes tap into you? Well,
I spoke to Nicky quite a bit. In fact, I was with him about a week ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know Nicky a great deal, but a lot of respect for him as well. But what he does, he comes over very well as a very honest and knowledgeable coach. And the reason I was suggested why the lads in the top of the league at the moment in time is that they've got ability, there's no doubt about it. But it's been honest in the right way. And Nicky's got a nice way of coaching. You know, he's been there himself. He's still fresh in his mind what it was like when he was a young player and what he wanted to get from coaches or he's offering what they were offering him as a young lad against to what he's offering them now. So I think he's still quite fresh in his mind, really, you know, what it was like when he was a player. So he's transferring that over to the kids now. You know, there's not as much pressure, and I say this, you know, honestly, there's not as much pressure on a youth team coach than a manager, you know. But what he's got to do, his pressure is producing players to be put on the first team, you know. And but still, you've got to go and recruit the right ones, you know, which, you know, is difficult. Once you think you've got them, you know, then I think it's a lot easier to coach them. If you spend a lot of time on young lads that's just never going to be there, you know, then you might be neglecting other players that are there. You know, they've got it.
Yeah.
But what the club will do, no doubt, from the top, they'll be putting pressure on to bring him in through the, you know, to get me to the first team as soon as possible. Because they don't want to go out and keep buying players. They want to come through their own ranks. And I think that's why you've got Bobby and Nicky, you know, in prime positions of this football club. You know, and they have brought some good players.
And Tom Arban as well, part of that transition now. I suppose, do you take any pride in terms like Nick is in football now, and you've obviously worked on developing as a player but also developing as a person? Do you take pride, do you take joy, do you, when you sit back and see him, you think,
And I do take pride, and I don't take any pride in the fact that I've done it, he's done it himself.
Yeah, of course.
I do take pride in seeing him progress, like I do with all players, you know, whether you know, they're playing in the Premier League now or whatever, you know, and you look at them and you think, you know, I had a little bit of that. It's better. Yeah. Well, more again than self, it's their own motivation again that gets them to where they are, you know, and they're old people, they'll do their old things, and they'll have their old traits of doing certain things, you know, their old character. But I do enjoy looking at the success, yeah, it's great.
So I suppose I'm going to ask you now in terms of an extract from a book or a song or a quote that you feel like kind of epitomises you, or you feel that is what I'm about. I don't know if you've got anything in mind.
Well, I think you just touched on the book there. I've managed to do an autobiography about a year ago now.
Yeah.
And I think the name of the book is, it sums me up really. It's I Get Knocked Down, But I Get Up Again.
Yeah.
Which is Chumbawamba.
It is Chumbawamba, yeah.
As this thing with the stuff, the wording in the song, it typifies a bit of me in there, you know. And
what, drinking a whiskey drink and a lager drink and a
service? I mean, I don't like whiskey. But certainly in the you know, getting knocked down and get up again, because that's just, it's been my life really, you know. We've there's been a lot of ups and downs, and but I've always managed to bounce back.
So resilience really is
yeah. That's one word I would like to use about myself.
What would you say when you look back, your biggest bounce back in terms of getting knocked down and getting back up again, in terms of like lowest and then, oh, I'm there now?
It's difficult though, because I've had quite a few. You know, it's you know, getting the sack from a football club is, you know, it dents your confidence. You know, and you think, you know, wow, you know, it is, am I that bad? Am I really that bad? And I think you've got to look at yourself in the mirror and shake yourself down and say, get on with it. You know, and you're not that bad. You know, look back at the good times and say, no, it can't be that bad because we've had some good times, so we must be doing something right.
Yeah.
And so that's really what I would suggest in that respect. It was nothing really ever gets me down too much.
Yeah.
That I can't bounce back again. You know, it's I've got a fairly strong will and, you know, fairly strong mind to make sure that you know, I don't feel too dead for too long.
I just can't catch a moment out of my head now, singing Danny Boy as I was chatting. I am listening, I promise, but it's there. It's ticking over. So moving on to the why then, in terms of yourself and possibly five words, and I could probably have, having a conversation already for 20 odd minutes, I suppose I could guess some of the words. Yeah. So five words really that would describe you, and just a little bit of an explanation to each one.
Well, you chose your one before, you know, empathy. I think I'm quite empathetic, I think I am. I do understand a lot of problems and talk about players, really, and my family as well. You know, I can sit and, you know, I can listen to people. I have a lot of empathy in that respect. And that with that comes a loyalty. You know, I'm a very loyal person. A lot of people will know that's what I'm like. Not easy. I don't take friends easy. You know, it takes a little while to be a friend.
Okay.
I don't know if that's a good trait or not, bad trait, but when I've got my friends, we're strong friends. You know, we have been for many, many years. So I think in that respect, I'm, you know, loyal in that respect.
Where does that come from then? Do you feel like you've like people before and they've possibly let you down, do you think? And then it's kind of a bit of a barrier, like a safety net to us.
Well, it's football, really. I think football, you get a lot of acquaintances.
Okay.
You know, you meet people on a regular basis, thousands of people, you know, throughout your career, but they're not all your friends.
Yeah.
They're nice people, you know, they're not doing it wrong, you know, but, you know, they're not the deep down friends that you have, you know, over a period of time. And I think with football, you know, we are passing ships in the night at times.
Yeah.
You know, you're at one place and you're gone, and you're setting a relationship up against somewhere else quickly.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I've learned in that respect, you know, that wherever I've been, there's always been one or two that I've left behind, the close friends, but not hundreds, you know.
Yeah.
Honestly, you know, they're not handfuls of them. There's a couple of three, you know, they might be really, really deep friends, you know. And but a lot of people alike, you know, but it doesn't mean to say that the clone wins, you know, but that's just me. You know, people say a bit difficult sometimes, you know, to get to know. But I'm a very private person. I think that's why. I don't open my heart up straight away, you know, to people I don't know. So I think is that a good thing or a bad thing? I'm not too sure. You know, people will judge me on that.
Yeah, there's pros and cons.
Yeah, there is, yeah. Yeah, there is. And I think, I think I'm hardworking.
Yeah.
When I throw myself into something, I will work very hard at it. It will take all my time up. I'm 100% type of person.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the traits here. But the last one, I think, more than anything, I'll just say, I think he's resilient. I'm very resilient, you know, and as I said, I do take notes. Everybody takes notes, but it doesn't get me down too much, you know. I bounce back again. Yeah.
How are your closest friends? And if I were to ask them a word to describe you, what might your wife say? Does it? We'll put a nice beep. That's fine. We got Adam, he'll edit it out. It's not a problem. So earlier we talked about success, things that you've learned from that and things that you feel have helped you achieve that success. So big one here, and I appreciate you joining us today and being so open, given that sometimes you are possibly a private person, quite a tough question. What would you say were your biggest failure in life, or sport, or both, if you want to do both sport and personal?
I think you're always disappointed when you don't do as well at clubs that you want to do, you know. And there's always different reasons, and it might be yourself who's not particularly done well. It might be circumstances, you know, around it that's happened. But I think the ones that, the second time here that I came here, that disappointed me. I disappointed myself because
is that your biggest disappointment in sport?
Yeah, I think, well, yeah, because I wanted to come back. I wanted, you know, I didn't think that some people wanted me back, you know.
Okay.
And not the fans I'm talking about, you know, the talking about upstairs.
Okay.
100%, you know, whereas before it was 100%, I didn't feel it was 100%. But when I got here, the atmosphere wasn't anything like that I'd left. And it was disappointing, you know, but we didn't have time really to rectify it or to put it back on track again. And I think the club was in a downward spiral that was difficult to turn it around again. So I suppose that was a big disappointment for me. That was a bit of a failure from my point of view. I should have done better.
What would you say you learned from that, by yourself or from others? Or
What I learned was, you know, it's not always the same when you go back somewhere, you know, and maybe I shouldn't have come back. And we should stay with the memories that I had before. Although it's not tainted anything.
No. I think you'd really struggle to turn what you achieved first time, biggest success period in club's history.
It was great. And but it didn't taint anything in terms of my opinion of Burns and the football club. It was just disappointing at the time that it wasn't the same atmosphere that I'd left before. And I felt it was difficult to turn it around. Possibly should have tried a bit harder and not given in to the fact that they were losing games and they were nearly relegated anyway. I think I should have been a more positive approach, really, for myself.
Yeah.
I'd offer
to try and juxtapose that negative vibe that were around. You feel like you should have raised your positivity to bring people up.
I should have done, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose, I don't know how many games you get to here at Oakwell currently. I suppose we're kind of on that journey at the minute, given last season's disappointment.
Yeah.
And atmosphere, probably put the last two, three games of last season. We mind Devaney having to take the reins until the summer, and quite an uneasy summer. And you look at what Michael's done here. It takes a long time to turn around, Danny, doesn't it?
Well,
a lot of effort.
Well, it does, you know, and I think you know, it does start from the top, you know, but it's, I think everybody's got to be on the same wavelength. That's the thing. And with Michael and I this year now, I think this is one of the best decisions the club's made over the last few years, and put in some leader like Michael. But Michael in particular now, he's that person. And it's paid dividends, you know, but not just on the football front or the results-wise, it just brings everybody together. He's got the ability to bring people together. you know, and the fans are on board. And I know results helped a lot, of course they do. But they still want to see somebody they can identify. And I think Michael stands out like a sore thumb in that area.
Yeah.
You know, he communicates very well. You know, the fans have taken to him straight away. They'll trust him. But more importantly, the players are trusting him. You know, and you see where the results are having at the moment. And who knows what's going to happen to him this season. You know,
we're in for a Grand Slam finish, either way.
Well, and I think, you know, with the game on Tuesday, though, Sheppard Wednesday on Tuesday, who knows? You know, who knows what happens if they win that game? You know, and put the pressure back on the top two. You know, so it's exactly. they've got a great chance, and by the sound of things, the mood they're in them up.
You mentioned about everybody being on the same page and being in sync, and we talked about the atmosphere. The atmosphere the last two or three games at Oldwell has been electric, Pontian full, big flags waving, music. We've had DJs here, we've had a band live on the pitch. When you talk about that, I suppose from a fan, and you being a successful manager, particularly at this place, how much effect are we actually having in terms of creating that environment?
Well, I used to say many times, and different clubs have been asked, you know, what impact does a fan make or fans make? And it's enormous. You know, it's enormous. It didn't matter how big the fan, how big the crowd is, you know, and the bigger the better. You know, less. But it doesn't really matter how many fans you've got in the stadium. If it's positive attitude, the players will respond to it. That's all you want. They will live up to, you know, the fact that you're cheering him and you're clapping him and you want him to do well. His confidence will be boosted rather than the opposite way around. And so the fans can make a massive difference, and always can, no matter what part of the table you're in, you know, top, bottom, middle, it doesn't matter. And the fans will always have an influence on players. You'll see players that maybe are not the favourites and they get booed a bit, you know, and whatever, depending on the mentality of that player, it won't help him. You know, where you can look at somebody else's role scoring and his goals and his fans love him. They'll get another one.
Because they're so easy to spot, aren't the goals? Like, we all know when there's been, I suppose, sometimes with some players go, like, I don't know, probably don't get the flowers that they deserve to a certain degree.
Yeah, of course, that's right. Well, in the team itself, the value will be recognised, you know, and I mean, I was almost that type of player, you know, but I was recognised by my teammates, which made me feel great.
Yeah.
You know, not necessarily scoring goals or whatever you're on, doing whatever, you know, and, you know, dribbling down the wing or something like that, which you wouldn't see me doing.
No.
But I had a value in the team at times, and I appreciated the fact that the rest of the players valued me. So that was my confidence booster, you know.
Yeah.
And I think players who've been running up and down football now are in the similar to me. But obviously, you're ones who want to bag the goals, you know, a little bit of favourites, the goalkeepers are outstanding, you know, a little bit of favourites or whatever. Mads Andersen as a centre-back is a favourite.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he stands up there, he stands out. And,
yeah.
So I think it's, individually, you don't have to be, you don't really have to be, glorified by the fans all the time. But as long as you're valued by your teammates, and certainly your manager, you have a chance.
It certainly feels like something special has been built there with the relationship between the manager, the first team coaching staff, the players and the fans, and you talked about it being in sync and everybody singing, you know, singing off the same hymn sheet. So I suppose you get that ball rolling, it becomes a little bit easier, doesn't it? And
yeah, it does. It does, but it's also difficult to keep it going.
To keep it going.
You've got to maintain a certain standard, you know, in your training, your setup, your weekly, you know, preparations, you know, and you've got to understand when people are taking the foot off the gas and recognising it. But then, you know, to them again. And it's easy to step back and say it's easy this when you're winning games. Hardest part is to keep you going. You know,
sure.
Keep the players that focus and continue what they've been doing before to get the results, you know, to take it forward again. And it's never the easiest time to do that time because players have got their heads somewhere else, laughing and joking and everything. They forget about the hard work, you know, and once that starts to happen and a little bit of focus goes away from what the supports we're doing, that's when the results start to tilt a little bit.
Of course, just looping back round, we've talked about your successes, talked about current success that Plan's having at the minute. It's a mini piece of success. Fingers crossed it'll continue and turn to something a little bit bigger.
I suppose I wanted your opinion on what success is. So rather than you give me an example of success in your life, I suppose, what would you define as success?
My definition of success in football is possibly different from the fans of a particular football club, because they will see the success on the pitch in winning championships or winning leagues, whatever it may be. I've been into many football clubs when it's been on their arse, and we've pulled around, and you know, possibly they're in the red, and they've pulled around in terms of finances, I think that's a success as well. That's got to be hailed as a success. But really, on the pitch, you might have finished mid-table, you know. But it's still a massive success story from my point of view, considering where you went in and where they were when you first went in. So, there's different levels of success in football. There's a success in saying, you know what, we're not going to be a big club, but we want to bring players through and sell them on. We want to do whatever it may be. And if you're doing that and you're successful in that and you're making millions or whatever it may be, that success is there. But ultimately, it's a result. The fans just want to see it win games.
Yeah.
You know, and I think even if you don't win games, if you can show a fan that you've given everything, you're completely out on your feet, you've given 100% and you can't do any more, they'll support you all the way through. And even if the results don't go. So even I'm talking now, the fans are loving it now, but it's been such a great effort today, and I think they'd be very supportive of the team and the manager if you didn't get promotion or didn't get to the playoffs, which I can't see anyway, but just saying now, I think they'd be very supportive because they've seen the difference in performance over the last year or so, and I think they've seen progress, and I think that's what fans want.
And then what about personal success for yourself? If you were to define if you were to decide what personal success would be, what would, because to me, success really is, you know, I'm employed, I get out of bed at a good time, I take my dog for a walk, right? They're all little mini successes that add up to a happy life. So what in terms of, what kind of things would you say that you do that keep you successful on a day-to-day basis?
I think I've got quite an open mind. I think I'm fairly open to anything that people want to talk about or suggest or whatever. I always listen to people, and I respect what opinions they've got. Don't always agree with it,
no.
But I want to respect it. And I think that's a little bit of a success in itself. I think I can listen to people in jobs that maybe aren't as glorious as a football, in a football job. Just as important, if not more important.
Like Youth Justice, for instance, Danny, which is my job.
Yeah. You know, and my family and my wife's family are all out of the medical area.
Okay.
So NHS and all that, that's very close to our hearts.
Yeah.
You know, and so I see all the hard work that they're doing now, and then people look at us, they'll look at football as a cash cow and say, cracker, what about the money there? And the NHS is struggling. You know, so I understand all that area. So, apathetic as well, you know, in that area. So I think success. I don't really know what I can answer with that. In success for me, other than, you know, been employed for most of my life, you know, and I think that in itself is a bit of a statement.
So being busy is a success. Staying busy, and always be having. I suppose you've always got to be somewhere, Danny.
Do it. I keep very busy. I can't sit still. That's my problem, man. If it is a bad trace or a good trace, I don't know, but I can't sit still. My wife tells me all the time, you know, you just can't. You have to do that. I know they'll want to be doing something. If I'm sat on the settee for 20 minutes before they go and do something, happening, so I just can't do it. But apart from that, you know, it's been great from that.
I personally think that we will one day have to sit on the sideline through poor health, I suppose, or through age. So I suppose while we're fit and healthy, why we're not on pitch doing it, like, whole time, like, I'm everywhere all the time. And I just think there'll be a time and a place for that. So while we've got it, we might as well
that's just exactly
right. Use it.
My wife and I's idea of getting old, you know, we're going to enjoy ourselves now. We've got so many friends, and we've lost too many friends too soon.
Yeah.
And we just determined to enjoy ourselves in whatever time we got left. And the family going on a holiday somewhere or looking after kids, then it's, you know, it's cooked something like that, yeah.
Yeah, have you got an holiday booked in soon?
We have, yeah. Yeah, we have, in, but it's in August.
Oh, sorry. A bit away, yeah. So, Danny, it's been wonderful to chat to you today. I suppose I always try and finish with Chris's big question. So the big question that I'm going to ask you, and I'll really put you on the back foot, see what you come up with. Who do you want to win in tomorrow, as it's been recorded today, in tomorrow's derby between Barnsley and Sheffield Wednesday here? Oh, well, I mean, that stand just over my shoulder, no doubt, will be absolutely crammed.
Yeah.
Sheffield Wednesday being a big good voice. However, the Pontian sold out.
Yeah.
So they'll be matched. This stand that we're in now, it'll be full to rafters. It's going to be a real good atmosphere. You've got two juggernauts, League One, both in fine form, going head-to-head, two good coaches in Darren Moore and Michael Duff. Some great quality on the pitch. I'm building it up here, Daddy. Building it up. I'm giving you a chance to think. I suppose there's two questions in there. I suppose, who do you think will win? And the big question, Chris's big question is, who do you want to win?
Well, the first one I'll go, who I think will win, Barnsley, I think at home, will be a very, very tough nut to crack. And although the Sheffield Wednesday has some terrific results away from home this season. But I just think on this derby game now, they might just have the edge. It'll be a tight game as well. It's a bit entertaining game. I wish I was here.
Well, you know, there's a place for you if ever you want a place in Legend Street, Danny, just let me know. It's there.
But I think I've got a little inkling that Barnsley will get a win. Who do I want to win? I want Barnsley to win.
Yep.
And the reason I say that is that I want Barnsley to win. I hope Barnsley can get his second place at Pip Ipswich and possibly keep that run going to get them out. And then you've got two South Yorkshire teams that's in the Championship. It'd be great. I mean, for both the teams to go up would be absolute, you know, from my point of view, utopia, you know. But it's been a big ask for Barnsley, but it's not something that it can't happen. So areas, yeah, Barnsley and Barnsley. So
Danny, you're a very clever man because you gave me a straight answer. He answered the question, but in a way you kind of sat on the fence as well and said we want both to be promoted. And I agree fully. I often think I've got a lot of friends that are Sheffield Wednesday fans, unfortunately. You know, it's not their fault, I suppose, it's just how it is. But when you think geographically and in terms of South Yorkshire, like, it'd be wonderful if they were to both be promoted, I suppose. Rotherham stay up as well.
Sheffield United, if they don't go, you know, then you've watched some great derbies, some fantastic games, and something for the fans to look forward to. You know, but it's in another league. You know, it's a league up and it's been success. So, you know, they've been there before, they know what it's about. You know, so there's a real, how can I say, a reality in thinking, family thinking. It's not beyond, you know, the imagination that they can do it. If they continue this run, you know, they could come from nowhere. And it's only like a couple of games turnaround against Ipswich.
Yeah.
Ipswich lose a few, you know, lose a couple and Barnsley win a couple more. And then all of a sudden it's, you know, it's head to head. You know, so it's quite seeable that they could end up in the Championship together with Wednesday, yeah.
Of course. So just before we go, I suppose you mentioned earlier your book. I just want to touch on that. You're in on Wednesday. You're going to be in the club shop. What time are you in from?
On 4 o'clock.
4 o'clock. And you'll be there signing books, greeting people, selling books. Just a bit on that piece of work then. Process, how long did it take? Are you pleased? Are you proud of it? And did you work with somebody, you know, alongside you?
Yeah, a guy called Matthew Mann was the guy who wrote the book for me. And it was him and another guy called Barry Pierpoint at Morgan Lawrence, who were the publishers, who approached me about 2 years ago for about the 10th time, you know, okay, over a period of time to write a book. And I never bothered about the book. But they put the slant on me and say, well, you know, this is not about money. It's about nothing. It's nothing like that. But it's just a bit of a legacy for my family. Mm. And I think when you know, when I'm not around, or whenever the kids grow up and the grandkids grow up, they'll not really know what I did. You know, they'll actually have a manager, they'll actually have a playable. You know, they'll only see a picture of me, I suppose, in a shirt and tie or a team shirt.
Yeah.
So I think this is just explaining one or two things and just leaving a little bit of legacy for them so they can read it, put it on a shelf and just let it go brown if they want to. It's, you know, it's up to them. But that's how it came around. And, I'm very proud of how it's turned out, really. I think from what I've been told, this is like me talking
Right, people can hear your voice as they're reading it. It comes across as genuine and you.
Also, it's not a book that I'm going to rip shreds out of people and this and the other, because I'm not that type of person.
No.
But one or two things that's in the book have to be said and put into place that I never said at given times at football clubs. Where, as I said before, I'm never a bitter person. I don't hold grudges. What it is in football, but still one or two things still have to be put straight that weren't reported correctly. So that's all there's in it. But it's just a bit of fun, and I hope it's a good read for people.
And being the official Barnsley Football Club podcast that we're on, is there a particular chapter or a particular segment that you think that the Reds fans will really enjoy?
There's lots of Barnsley in there. Yeah.
Okay.
Lots of memories, which. If people are old enough, they might remember it. But there's quite a big chunk of the book that's about Barnsley, and our proud and privileged.
Brilliant, Danny. I suppose on behalf of all Barnsley fans, to do them justice, I just want to say thank you to yourself really for all your time that you've spent at the club at different periods, and all your successes, and in a way all your failures. You know, you're part of the fabric of this club's history. Nothing will ever change that. So congratulations on your book. I'm looking forward to reading it. Thank you very much for joining us today. As a fan who's sat up at top of East Stand, absolutely crying his eyes out when Clint Marcel put it in at that end. I just remember my dad trying to say, the game's still playing, watch the game. And I literally couldn't see for tears. I just want to thank you for the memories, for the moments, and just for being Danny Wilson and for getting knocked down and for getting back up again. All right. No worries. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
So, Coyote, what a fascinating listen as a Barnsley fan, but also somebody who's worked in leadership myself. And obviously, everybody's striving for success, and in terms of Barnsley and leadership, don't come more successful than Danny Wilson.
No, not at all. Like we spoke about before, you know, he's had some really, really high moments in his career, not just like Jura, but playing as well. And you know, one of the things that's obviously stood out for me, you know, was when he spoke about resilience. It's something that's very big in terms of what I do, in terms of the people that I speak to. I mean, when we first had one of our initial exchanges, you know, we talked about resilience and how you react to certain things that happen in life. Obviously, he's put us forward, I get knocked down. So again, it's, you know, something that resonates with me. And not just in the football world. I think we like to say that just in life in general, you're going to come up against highs and lows, and it's about, you know, keeping a level head. And then when those times come, when you do get knocked down, that, you know, you don't let it sort of take you under, because at the end of the day, whatever happens to you, you've always got a choice. There's something I always try to say to my clients, you know, whatever you think's going on, whatever is happening in your life, there'll be someone else that's going through a lot worse than what you are, when they're doing more than what you're doing. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
So again, that's resilience in a nutshell. And the more you show that resilience, the further that you're going to get in life. And people have this misconception that if you're a positive person, you don't get affected. It's not that you don't get affected, it's that you react to the situations better, because, like I said, life happens to everyone.
Yeah.
You're going to get roadblocks, you're going to get obstacles, and it's how you choose to react to it.
Yeah, you're right. It's a good way of looking at it. I suppose that's resilience is a skill, really. It needs to be defined. You know, you need to work on it, isn't it? It's like a muscle to a certain degree, and it's obviously up there and in your head. But when I think about myself, terms of like being positive, you're right, things still happen to myself that do hurt and do knock me back. And I suppose having that attitude and being resilient, being able to bounce back quicker so it affects you less, or you might learn something from that. I suppose when, I know we're going to talk about his emotions and stuff in a little while, when you're really emotional about a situation and it kind of hurts you,
yeah,
and it knocks you back, it's so difficult sometimes to see the trees for the woods, isn't it? And see that, oh, actually, next time, if I approach it like this, or if I could change how I adapt, you know, kind of adapt to overcome, I suppose.
Definitely. I mean, you've hit a nail on the head there. So from whatever situation you come across, what you got to try and remember is there's always, like you've just said, some kind of lesson to be learned, some kind of blessing or some kind of positive within that. You might not see it straight away because sometimes it might be quite raw. Like you said, you might go through a bit of pain, through some adversity, but in the end, there will be something to learn or to take from it. And the thing is, if you either win or you learn, you can never lose, can you? So in whatever situation, you're either winning or you're learning. So it's always a positive. So if you can just, you know, try and apply that kind of mindset, then you will build that resilience that we've talked about. And again, you hit the nail on the head when you said, if you want to be strong physically, you train. So if you want to be strong mentally, you got to train your mind. So surround yourself with the right people, listen to the right things, watch the right things. That's how you build that resilience. It's not going to happen straight away.
No.
Using yourself again as an example, if you look at your resilience now to your resilience when we first spoke, how much more that is. And that's not just happened by chance. You built that and you've worked at it. And, you know, obviously that's what Danny spoke about.
Of course. And Danny coming here today, he talked about his biggest failure being his second tenure here. A lot of emotion tied to Danny and coming to this place.
Yeah.
But he come back here, he sat in that very chair that you're sat in, and he smiled throughout and he was happy, and we're overlooking the pitch. And he talked about not wanting to tin his previous successors. But I suppose he put himself back out there. He came back. He came back not only second time to take over a team that were in a totally different place, and when he left it, but he challenged himself in doing that. When you do take on a big challenge like that, you are putting yourself at risk of failure and having to bounce back.
Sure. I everything you just said there, like automatically, I'm just looking at all the positives. So one, he's big enough and bold enough to think this is a challenge. I'm going to do it. People probably say, don't go back, never go back. But he thought, do you know what? I back myself to do it and I'm going to go and give it a go. And the thing is, regardless of what he felt may have happened in that second sort of spell, the first spell that you say it's tenure, but they're never going to take that away. No, there, it's factual. It's in the history book. So one, that's not going to be taken away. And secondly, whatever happened in that second spell, you will use that. You would have used that moving forward. And like I said, I'm just looking at the positives. You know, the fact that he was able to take on the challenge, the fact that he came back and he wanted to do it, that's massive for me. And I think credit to him for doing that, because a lot of people might have shied away. And if he had shied away, he might not have got some of the opportunities that followed after that. So only positives for me, and the fact that he could come back, sit in his chair, still be smiling, still look back on everything fondly, then, you know, again, it's just win-win, isn't it?
Of course. And we talk about him smiling, and he come across as really, obviously he's genuine, but he come across as really emotional, and he talked about his emotions and being empathetic and understanding other, and trying to understand other people's emotions and how they might feel. And he talked about showing emotion as well, like as men, well, as people, yeah. not just men. I don't want to just stick to that. I suppose as people, we live in a world where sometimes that's difficult to do, particularly in a working environment as well. And I talked to him about how his emotions how his emotions and being able to show that he is emotional made him more empathetic, and having that contact with players and being able to draw the best out of people. Like, do you think that's, because you were talking about, is it a good thing or is it a bad thing being empathetic and having been so emotional? I don't know, what have you got any thoughts on that?
Do you know what, I think it's massive, I really do. And I think if you can't show empathy, then it's kind of like, how can you then put yourself in someone else's shoes? How can you then, you know, help them? Because if you can't sort of see their perspective or where they're coming from, then you're not really going to be able to help them in any way. And I've always said, right from an early age, as a manager of a football club, I don't think you can be the best tactically, you know, you can have the most history behind you, but I think that personal touch, that sort of relationship you have with your players, I think that's the most important. And it's no surprise that, again, he speaks so much about being empathetic, because, you know, that's why he was so successful as a manager, because he can do that. I mean, you have to learn that someone might speak to you in a certain way to get the best out of you, and someone might speak to me in a totally different way, because everyone's different. You can't treat everyone the same. Everyone's so unique, and they react and respond to things differently. So it made thorough sense of what he's saying, what he's saying.
Yeah, and I alluded to it earlier in terms of when I said a man.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're all emotional, but there's a real stigma regarding men and mental health and showing their emotion. So I suppose something like Danny, who's so experienced and been in football so long and worked in football through different decades, I think it's wonderful to hear him speak like that. Like, stereotypically, you think he'd be, you know, walk in and a bit,
yeah.
Like, so I kind of like that. And that's probably, would you say that's probably why he's lasted so long in the game? And that, he talked about his longevity in the game. He's adapted, and he talked about his open-mindedness as well. So I just think he's come from a different era in terms of football. He's went in different decades, where once upon a time we wouldn't treat players as we treat them now. I suppose that linked with his longevity and the fact he mentioned about being open-minded.
Well, it all just goes hand in hand, and it's, again, no surprise that he's done what he's done. He's lasted as long as he's lasted, because, again, if you haven't got that open-mindedness, if you haven't got that empathy, then from era to era, he wouldn't have been able to, you know, adapt like as well as he's done. So, you know, in this, not even in just this day and age, but I think in order to progress, you have to kind of be open to everything and attached to nothing. So your mind's open. You can take people's point of views. You can take bits and pieces, and then take what you want to use to your advantage, to use to help you get to wherever you're trying to be or what you're trying to do. And like you said, with the stigma sort of surrounding men and the mental health and being able to talk, you know, we've alluded to the fact that in order to help other people, you have to show that empathy, but you have to show yourself that same kindness that you show to other people. So as an individual, if you need help, if you need to grow, if you need to progress in whatever way, you need to be open-minded, you need to be able to speak well, and, you know, don't be afraid of asking for help if you need help, whether you're a man, woman, child, wherever you're from, it don't matter. Just, you know, open up and get yourself the help that you need, because if you don't, then you're just going to be stuck in this area. So it's brilliant to hear someone of Danny Wilson's caliber speak about these.
Yeah, not everybody's help comes in the shape of Kayode Ajayi. Like mine did, I suppose there's help that you could access in the various places.
Listen, it's, again, very cliche and, you know, very sort of cheesy, but it's all right not to be okay. It really is. And the only way you're going to get better, the only way that you can help is to reach out and ask him, wherever that may be, in whatever shape or form, just go out, get the help that you need, and then, you know, you feel so much better. And the great thing about that is you can then be a shining light for someone else. And I think I've said that for you as a
sure
enough, because after our conversations, after your journey, you've been able to do the same for other people. So it's kind of the gift that keeps on giving.
It's the gift. It's the gift. So just for fun, I suppose, I want to reflect back on his rapid response answers.
Yeah.
We're going to decide between us if we're going to give him a mark or not.
Yeah.
And then we're going to add that to the total number of seconds which were left from Danny's rapid response and get a number. I've got 24 seconds in my head. I might be wrong, but that's what I'm going to add. So that's what we're going to go with. So 24 seconds plus Green Mile as his favourite film.
What a great film that. Have you watched
it? Yeah, I've seen it.
No, I really like that film. It's a hard one for me. You know, whenever people say, oh, like your best film movie, but, you know, to just like nail it down to one, I think there's so many people out there, but listen, yeah, I'm happy.
He was quick with his answers. He was a really rapid response. 24 seconds left.
The fact that he just, you know, that was the first thing that comes to it. No.
So we're going to give him a mark for that. Let's give him a mark for that. Steak pie.
For his favourite food?
Yeah.
See, I'm a big foodie, to be honest, believe it or not. And I think there's a steak for, listen, his personal preference, isn't it? So
of course,
steak pie, I'm not sure.
Okay, well, you've given him the point for Green Mile. Yeah. So steak pie for me, as part of my job, I sometimes travel into Sheffield, which we've mentioned quite often on this episode. It might not happen so often again. But once a week, sometimes I visit a canteen where I work.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful old lady called Anne there, and she's so warm and so kind and so happy and smiley. Yeah. It makes me weak. And she always puts me a steak pie in.
I like a pie, but
with chips.
Yeah.
With mushy peas, and gravy. So I'm gonna say a point for that. So that's 2 points so far. Yeah. Favourite pastime? Golf.
See, I like golf.
Yep.
And I'd love to play a bit more, but it's something that I never really got into. So in terms of, listen.
Nothing wrong with it. It's his pastime and that's what he likes doing. You too, Cap.
I doesn't it. You're just going to give him all 10 points because he's so kind.
To me, I'm going to say no point.
Yeah.
Golf, yep, fine. Glad he loves it. I'm glad he's got that sport. He talked about keeping up with exercise. So it's good that he's got that. It's good that he's got that outlet. We've all got as different outlets. In terms of me and you,
yeah.
I suppose to me, golf's a waste of a good walk.
Yeah.
Like, and I would rather take my Labrador. So I'm going to say no for golf. But he is out in the open. There is pressure out. And I think sometimes, for me, when I go out with the dog, and I suppose you have it, it's nice to go out and into the open, fresh air, and just have a reset, silence.
Yeah.
But I don't need somebody shouting four at me.
No. To be fair, I always encourage people to just be active. So whatever you do, as long as you enjoy it.
Yeah. Do you want to give him half a mark?
I'm going to give him a mark for that.
You're going to get, but I don't want to give him one, so shall we say half? Right, okay. We'll meet halfway.
No problem.
The thing he mentioned about things that really annoyed him.
Yeah.
Ignorant people. I suppose we need more elaboration on what he means by that. Yeah. But I suppose for myself, I'm quite open and like approach. I like to think I'm approachable. I want to talk to people. I find people interested, but I find everybody fascinated. Yeah. If I could walk around this ground for the next 8 hours and chat to everybody, I would. I suppose some people might not want to chat to me, and they're kind of going through their own things that might have bothered them. You know, the car might not have started this morning. They might have missed a meal.
Sometimes you come across people, and I think you just got to take it at sort of face value. It's never about you. It's about them or something else we have. So, yeah, I would, for me, if I come across as someone that was showing a bit of ignorance, I would just think, well, I hope whatever got going up,
he's
going
to fix itself. I say we give him half on that one. So that'll give him a total of 3 then. Yeah. So he's in 3. Favourite place? He said South Africa.
Yeah. So it's not somewhere I've been, but I've heard really good.
He talked about that it'd been hot.
Yeah.
And he talked about the people as well, which goes against what he, which goes for what he was saying for number 4. You know, the fact he likes people to be. So I think we should give him a mark for that. Let's give him a mark for that. So I think I've got 4.
Yeah.
So far, flying is his biggest fear.
Flying.
I suppose it's quite inhumane to fly. We weren't born with wings.
It's a strange one because it's weird because it's sort of, when I was younger, it never used to faze me. Obviously, when you're younger, it does. But it's almost like, you know, the older you get, the more you start to sort of dissect things and think, hang on a minute, how's this even happening? Do you know what I mean? But listen, I mean, I don't know, in terms of our life, I suppose these were called rapid, so they didn't really go in.
I suppose my thought would be there's a lot of things that scare me much more than flying. Like, it's quite controlled, isn't it?
Is it true they say it's safer than
a road?
Yeah.
So I don't think we gave him a point for that. I think he... he can't have a point for that. That's 4. In terms of George Michael, I've got written down. Adam, what was that for?
That was who you want to spend time on a park bench.
Who do you want to spend time with on a park bench? George Michael.
Well, personal preference again.
Personal preference?
Would
you enjoy a bit of time with George Michael on a bench? I suppose I wouldn't.
Well, I'm a people person. So
you
speak to anyone. I think I could think of a few better people than that.
So we're not going to give him another mark?
Let's do a bit harsh.
And things that he finds funny, so things that make him laugh most, he said kids, which I think that's a great answer.
Oh, brilliant. They're just so honest, so brutally and honest, and there's just a purity about the way they are and the thing they do is just sort of, yeah.
and just the naivety, yeah, sheer like not like understanding, but just lack of, like you said, they're just so level,
yeah,
and they're so honest,
yeah.
So that's good. I think that's a good answer. That takes us to five. Nickname, the weirdest one he said that he had was Stumps. Now I didn't get to elaborate on it. I'm assuming it's due to his height, but I might be wrong. He might hate me for that. I'm not sure as a nickname. Or, I mean, would you be happy with that as a nickname?
You might not be happy with, but I don't think with regards to nickname, you don't really have much choice, do you?
No.
And then like whatever people decide, there you can't. Well, I don't know. Can you have your own self-proclaimed nickname, I suppose, but yeah.
My nickname currently is Busy Riddy, which I'm quite pleased with, because I think
it depends on which way you look at it.
And I think sometimes people use it as a negative connotation just to wind me up, saying I'm everywhere. But I like being busy, which is what Danny talks about as well. He talks about being busy.
Yeah,
he did, didn't he? Constantly. Yes. I think we give him a mark for Stumps. Yeah. It's not his choice anyway.
No.
So I think that takes him to five.
Right, okay.
Adam's saying six. Six. Good job, Adam's here. He's capable of counting, unlike me and you.
Say, and I agree there.
Yeah, yeah. And in terms of karaoke song, when I was just 17, the Beatles. Now, Beatles are like, you know, pioneers of music, aren't they? I would argue that he probably deserves a...
They didn't pick a George
Michael song. I know, you think. He probably didn't want to do double George Michael.
Too much George Michael, maybe.
You can have too much George Michael. So I think that takes us to seven.
Yeah.
So he's not into seven at 24. He's 31. Adam, just double checking. I've got that right. I've got that right. That's good. So yeah, Danny scored 31. I mean, good. Just to summarise, and on that episode,
yeah.
Danny was really open. First time I've met him. Really open, really honest. Quite an emotional person. He talked about that, developing that and changing as he grew older and through football. Obviously, Ed really enjoys his golf, but spending time with grandkids, and he clearly likes having youth around it.
Yeah, yeah.
I suppose I'm like that in a way as well. I work with young people, and I think they keep me young to a certain degree, and certainly keep me on my toes. So just reflecting back, I think I, as a Barnsley fan, and the history and stuff, and I talked about, you know, the effect that he had on me as a young Barnsley fan, yeah, and all that emotion,
yeah,
that season. And that period, he's an absolute legend in my eyes, and a real hero. And it was a real pleasure to meet him, and I found him really interesting and intelligent.
No, definitely. I mean, it was like you say, when you kind of come across these individuals, and you got them on a bit of a pedestal, you know, like say for what they've achieved, and you know, things that they've done in their life, and then to get that sort of get to know them a bit more on a human level, rather than sort of, you know, you might have a perception of them from afar. So it was really insightful, and you know, some really heartwarming points that he made. And yeah, I think it was a really good opener for the session.
That's it. And we'll be back again, KOD, with another guest, and me and you will have a nice chat, and we'll reflect on what we take away from that.
Always good.
Spot on.
Top man.
Thank you for listening. For more news, information and ticketing, please visit www.barnsleyfc.co.uk. And to purchase replica kits, training wear, gifts, souvenirs and leisure wear, visit www.barnsleyfcdirect.co.uk. Barnsley FC is on all social medias, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Until next time, take care.